in dollars, what's the value of the maintenance if it's deferred 5, 10, or 20 years, as this plan says, just of the existing system? What is the current strategy to fund the O&M backlog? And how does the unimproved streets factor into the funding strategy? And finally, given the recent history of, I think, at least two payment preservation bond measures, what's the strategies to come out with a positive outcome in the future? So given all of those questions, I ask, how does this proposed transportation plan impact the ability of local governments, i.e. the city of Springfield, to rationally consider the construction and operation of the facilities? And that comes right out of Goal 12. So I think you've got a big hurdle. Before you go out trying to buy a bunch more, we need to take care of what you got. And I think there's a lot of folks in this room that know it, and I appreciate your opportunity to let me speak.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yay. Craig, your last name will
Rash.
Thank you.
I live at 3859 Hayden Bridge Road. I'm here representing me and Susie Anderson and I. And gentlemen earlier discussed Hayden Bridge Road and the increase in traffic and stuff. And one of my big concerns is we moved out there because it was quiet, it was nice, there's a lot of retired people out there, and a lot of elderly people out there walk up and down those roads all the time. You already have a problem with traffic. I live on the curve where you come off Marcola, and when you come down the hill, you have a pretty good curve to the west, and we already have problems with cars running cars off the road because there's nobody there to monitor the road. It's a two-lane road.
That map, please?
And nobody takes care of the speed limit. But we also have wildlife people are dodging. And we have a very high bicycle population uses that road, as well as two bike relays that go down there every summer, or one in the spring, one in the summer. And my biggest concern is, what's going to happen to that road? Part of that road you cannot widen to accept more traffic because you're going to have to push the road off the cliff. And that doesn't make sense. The other problem is, you know, basically just huge amounts of safety that we're already dealing with now. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right. We have Laverne Ritter and Gary Burnett on deck. Laverne Ritter?
Coming. Lost in the back. Thank you. I appreciate your having this meeting for us.
Speak into the microphone, please.
All right.
Thank you.
My concern is the heavy traffic.
Could you please state your address?
I'm Laverne Ritter. I live at 1101 Dale Rose Court in Springfield. I'm in the city limits. One of my neighbors spoke earlier about his concerns about cutting streets into our neighborhood. My concern is the heavy traffic that is in North Springfield. And it seems it started when we put the Beltline, Pioneer Parkway down to Safeway. Down in that area, it is heavily congested. Most people traveling in that area will shy away from it. When they put in the turnaround, I said in the meeting when they announced that, I said, good, they're going to run the traffic on Hayden Bridge Road, the 19th, and go into Mohawk area right there at that time. Down at Safeway, there is no means for a free right-hand turn at Walgreens. People will try to go around Walgreens drugstore, come out through their parking lot, or they'll go around through Safeway and sneak out that way. It's heavily congested there, and then if you come off of the freeway at night, you come into Pioneer Parkway and you try to head north, all the people want to crowd into one lane on the left. The signs that direct the traffic in the two lanes is standing, is right behind a post, close to it, and it doesn't direct the traffic properly, because there should be two lanes turning left in front of Walgreens, and there's one lane, and it's heavily congested, and you go out and hit the freeway, head to town that way. So that is my one problem area, is number one on my list. Number two is up there that turnabout, and people are now trying to shy away from it. They're using Laura Street. If you watch that, they're cutting over there and going down that heavily now. And we just missed connecting Laura Street to that turnaround because they're, I don't know what they're building in there right now, right at Hayden Bridge Road and Laura Street right now. But they've given that property away. And it's probably still accessible if one were to study it. I've been looking at this map for the last few days, and my summation of that whole area east of the Pioneer Parkway is a box. And you proposed a lot of changes in our neighborhood and in the neighborhood to the west of us, and any change you make inside the box will do nothing to move your traffic out of that area, because everybody has to come out to that roundabout. So anything you do in there is wasted money and wasted time. So I think that we need to go, William, talking about you too, we need to go in there and start thinking about how we can get a bridge across the river, the McKenzie River, in maybe one or two places to direct the traffic and go into East Springfield on the north side.
Okay.
My time up?
Yes.
All right. I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Something like this.
Okay. Gary Burnett and Colleen Prock on deck.
Yes, I'm Gary Burnett. I live at 3505. What? Start all over. 3210 Raleighwood Avenue, and it's in the Lane County area. I live right next to Gamebird Village, right off of Game Farm Road. This particular thing doesn't pertain particularly to this, what's going on right now, other than the fact that I've got a city and a county person in front of me, which I've been trying to do for the last 2.5 years. And every time I call the city about it, they say talk to the county. I call the county and they'll take care of it. Okay, what it boils down to, Game Farm Road is a narrow road, very narrow road. The city give permits to Women's Clinic to build a building without adequate parking. When we build our building on Q Street, our buildings on Q Street, we went to the city. We had to have adequate parking. We couldn't park on the city street. We had to have adequate parking. It had to be paved parking. It had to be beautified. So what did we do? The county and the city get together and let the workers at Women's Clinic park on dirt, gravel, and make U-turns on Game Farm Road, open their doors on the main street, and expect people to stop for them. I think it's time that we take care of what we got and not what's in the future. I can't understand for the life of me that you ever allowed it, or that nobody on the county or the city wants to take the bull by the horns and do something about it. When we developed our property, we had to have so much parking. I would have loved to have covered that whole property with a building and had parked on the street, but that wasn't allowed. Thank you.
Okay, Colleen Prock and Emily Dahl on deck.
Colleen Prock. I live at 2230 Rhododendron Street, and I'm in the transition area that you're talking about, if you want to bring that up on the map. Okay, so every time I call to talk about this, or every the last meeting that I went to, I keep hearing this has nothing to do with annexation, which I disagree. I mean, who's going to be controlling those roads that you are now taking from the county? Or is it, who's taking control of those now? City. City's taking control of those. So we are outside the city limits, and yet I'm going to be surrounded by city property now with every single one of these roads and bike paths that are going to be going around, literally around my property at 2230. So, you know, I think a lot of reason that you don't see a lot of people here is because they keep being told that this has nothing to do with annexation. It is the very beginning stages of the annexation. So I know we're inside the urban growth boundary. I know eventually we're going to be annexed into the city, but we fought it for 30 years. I bought that house in 87. The house is paid for. I do not want to start putting hooking up to sewer, you know, and in my retired age. Not interested, and I don't think any of my neighbors are either. I know they aren't. So, I guess that's all I have to say is, please stop telling people this has nothing to do with annexation, because it's the very beginning stages of it, and we've fought through it numerous times, and we don't want to do it anymore. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, Emily Dahl and Dave Hyland on deck.
I'm Emily Dahl, 11650 Flamingo. I represent the Dawes that live at 630 Flamingo. We are not against a bike path or a walking path, just not down Flamingo. The reason why is because we already have Food for Lane County, a garden for Springfield School District, and a community garden. And on Saturdays, it's already like a Target parking lot. And we believe that having an additional trail is beyond our capacity for tolerance. Right now, there's parking issues when they have any special activity. And so we don't want additional cars with the community garden. It's bringing in preschoolers that run in the street. And we don't need any more traffic because of that. And we would just like the trail to go someplace else and take any additional traffic or people coming down our street. That's all we want, is it to be someplace else. And we realize nobody wants it, but we already have our share. Thank you.
Okay. All right, Dave Hyland is up, and David Bradberg. On deck.
Hello, my name is Dave Hyland. I've lived in Springfield my entire life.
Can you speak into the mic, please?
My name is Dave Hyland.
Thank you, Dave.
I've lived in Springfield my entire life. My father was born in Lowell somewhere around early 1900s.
Your address, Dave?
And I love Springfield. I go out of my way to say I'm on this side of the river, you know what I mean? So anyway, we have four businesses on Main Street, and one at 1517 South A Street, if you can pull that up. We simply don't have any room to give up. We have a finance business there, and we have a car lot there, and there's 0 inches to give up. Just so you can familiarize yourself with where it's at, Bullfrog's on one side of us, and Star Rail's across the street. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible car accident there about 10 days ago. So anyway, you drive by our lot, just see that it barely functions. It was an old car lot, or a service station at one time, so it wasn't designed to be a car lot. It amazes me that we're pushing this project through. You're saying there's no funding. I'm sure there's funding. I'm sure that it's just a matter of checking the box. This meeting is a matter of checking the box, I imagine. I would hope that we don't do what we did in Eugene and just jam it down the throat when they didn't want it. And I hope you guys really think about that. I mean, I imagine this project, there's no way to stop it, no way to derail it. You don't have one person I heard supporting it here. And so, you know, it just appears to me that we have plenty of projects like what Gary Burnett was just talking about to finish, take care of our own, take care of what we have. Our business here on 15th Street, there's a gravel road just to the west of us. We gravel it ourselves and rake it out. One block back to the north or the south of us is another gravel road. And we all pay taxes. I kind of like to have my road paved. You know, there's just lots of things to do here. I hear one person in the aisle saying that the DOT, the regulations you guys are using is an 85-foot width highway, but you aren't showing anything in the middle for the turning lanes. So by the time you had a turning lane in there in the middle, it's 15 feet, so now you're going to have to shove all that back out 7-8 feet on both sides. So I think your measurements you're using are unrealistic. They maybe help you to push it through and get it going, but when you look at your 85-foot arterial that you guys are proposing, it's really not going to end up being 85. And, you know, I mean, everybody's about free money, matching money. This isn't free money. We all pay taxes. It's our money. It's federal government's going to match your money, but really it's coming from this room. Every person in here that pays taxes is going to be paying for this. Thank you, sir. I knew I was getting close.
Thank you for your question.
Okay, David Bradley, is that right? David?
Bradley?
Bradley. And Scott Sattler is on deck.
Hello, my name is David Bradley. I live at 488 South 52nd Street. That's on the corner of Daisy. When I purchased my home, I spoke with David from the City Planning Department, and he gave me not only a promise but a guarantee that there would never be any easements or property or any modifications to the road there on Daisy at my property. And the reason why I know that he gave that to me was because I contacted him, because there's an easement on either side of my property already. 4 years went by. David shows up at my front door and says, hey, by the way, we want to build a sidewalk over here. Do you want to give us some of your property, or would it just be okay if we build it on the opposite side of your fence and it won't affect you at all? I said, go ahead, build your sidewalk on that side, which is, a matter of fact, the one thing he said the city would never put money forth in doing because there was a sidewalk on the other side of the street. I was not given a notification on the open house, nor for tonight. Found out about it yesterday. I contacted every one of my neighbors. None of them were notified of either the open house or tonight's meeting. Therefore, that's why they are not here. I will be here on the 6th. I still don't know quite yet what the plan is for that street. I have to do my due diligence to find out what it is for the 6th. I guess I just wanted to stress my opinion and point that there's a problem when the city gives you a promise. You buy a piece of property because of a promise and a guarantee. You put your hard-earned money into it. It's my first home. I bought it with my wife, which passed away 2 years afterwards. She had cancer. And here I am now, not knowing whether I'm going to lose my property or the availability of my subdivision that's on that lot. I have 488 and 488 and a half. So my whole life at this point is in the hands of a city which guaranteed me my life would never change. And here it is today. I feel like it's going to have a big change. Thank you.
Okay, Scott Sattler, and on deck is Stephen Boer.
Good evening. Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Scott Sattler. I live at 1133 Dale Rose Drive. If you could pull that up. And also include Harvest Lane down to the river. That'd be great. So my wife and I...
Are you in the city limit?
We are in the city limit, okay. Yes. We are in the city limit. Wife and I moved into our house 17 years ago. It dead ends at both ends of Dale Rose. Pull that up. Several of my neighbors have already spoken that are in the Orchard View neighborhood. As they said, there are many children in our neighborhood. Two families just recently moved in within the last year. Each have three children, all under the age of 8 years old. The street is not with cars parked on both sides of Dale Rose. It's not wide enough for traffic, an increase in traffic there. But if you could pull up Harvest Lane. So I'm sure everybody's been to the Rododowski boat landing. Beautiful down there. I love going down there with the kids during the summer and playing in the water. So usually at least once, twice, three times a month, we can hear the racing traffic on Harvest Lane. I think it closes at 10 p.m., supposedly. Usually after 10 p.m., there's racing heading towards the river and then back. So if you're going to connect Dale Rose to Harvest Lane, so I think that would just add to the racetrack, right? So from the roundabout, you take your souped up car and go through the neighborhoods, and I'll go down Hayden Bridge, and we'll see who can get to the boat landing first. So I just think it should be questioned, and it doesn't need to be connected to Harvest Lane. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Scott, Stephen Boer.
Steve Boer. 35 Ann Court, Springfield. I'm in the urban growth boundary. You'll bring that up. There's a little dotted line goes right down my property line. Takes how many feet you're going to have for a multi-purpose path right down the east part of my property and on the west part of one other lady that's here. I've been in that location since 1958. I've dealt with this extension for 30 years. I was told with the previous governor when he was down here with Lane County that I didn't pay him enough to go to bat for him. Actually told me that when we were walking the railroad and back in my father's backyard. They took 20 feet of my backyard, 280 feet long, 20 feet cut in, made us move all the stuff for the parkway. They came and asked for another 10 feet so they could put a bike path down east side of what's Martin Luther King Boulevard now. And then I find out through my neighbor that they're going to put a bike path, the proposed bike path through Ancord and open up a beautiful, lovely, closed community to all kinds of garbage that goes on bike paths. We have already dealt with the transients trying to camp underneath the laurel hedges. We had to have them moved out. We've already dealt with the people coming over the gate that's there to rob us, take stuff that's not theirs. We've caught them, we've done this and that, trying to figure out how to take care of the deal that comes through there. We've had the drug paraphernalia and all the stuff for my grandkids to get stuck with on the outside there between the hospital and us. I would like to see and propose that you take that off of the agenda and off of this proposal completely, because it opens up, I'm speaking for that whole neighborhood, clear over to Laura, Manor, Allen, clear over to those. I'm speaking for those people. And by the way, I didn't get a postcard. I don't miss these things. We don't throw the stuff away when it comes to what they're doing. I didn't get one. I found out from a neighbor. So I would like to, with the existing bike paths that go along the Martin Luther King, why put another one 68 feet and open up and put all of that garbage back into the neighborhood? I had my grandson come from Royal Dell Park the other day with a needle stuck in his bike tread. Could have very easily got himself pricked with that thing. And that was on a bike path that opened up some people over there, their backyards into Royal Dell.
Right.
So please, take heed what I'm saying, and please rethink this dotted line on Ann Court there.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we still have about seven that are neither have marked neither in favor or against, and we'll begin those with. Robert.
It's like someone lives on 70291.
There we go. I'm a sloppy writer.
That's okay.
So I was in a hurry to fill out that card.
Okay.
At this
and
point,
just Robert McPherson, box 70291, Springfield 97475. My family.
And Jeff Heacock is on deck. So
there's a couple of properties involved, but the one that I'm concerned for my family is on Jasper Road past Clearwater.
So is that in the?
It's in the urban growth boundary. The other one, the other properties are in the city limits.
Okay.
One of them's not far from this one, but it's pretty clear at this point that after my past experience of going to council meetings that this is just a minor formality because you've already made up your mind. I wonder how much money you people spent on this already. And quite honestly, I'm very disappointed. I came here years ago when even more people showed up for the Glenwood Roundabout Paris France deal, and you guys all backed off. And then all of a sudden, bam, it got shoved through. Mm-hmm. These kind of things need to come up to a vote by the people affected. And the urban growth boundary in, you shouldn't be jamming it down our throats. It's just wrong.
Amen.
This is turning into a damn banana republic, and you people should be ashamed of yourselves. And you know it's true. We're getting regulated to death, taxed to death. Our family looked into splitting off one lot not long after the 2001 new city charter, right? You went from a few thousand dollars to you guys getting over two-thirds of the money out of the value of one lot. The only people that can even do that are like Hayden Homes that do 100 lots or more. I mean, it is wrong. If I did that, you guys would have me in jail for racketeering. Right? Why is it legal for you guys to charge so damn much money? And yet, you give big breaks to the big money people on top of that. But this is just like the MX thing, too, in Eugene. You guys had that all mapped out. You jammed it down people's throat. It's sick and it's wrong, and you guys need to step back and put it on a vote of the ballot for the majority of the people to vote on it. And I'm done.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to point out to the audience that I'm a volunteer, and that as far as I know, not too many people are able to read my mind and decide how I might vote.
Just one.
I'm Jeff Heacock. We have a property, a commercial property on 4270 and Main Street.
Okay.
And I suppose I can ask a question. I mean, you guys are probably all up to date on all the paperwork that was involved in this TSP documents, I mean, because we had to be in order to come here. But my question is, and I don't know if I can answer this one of you, or, but originally there was, I think it was a year and a half, 2 years ago, there was a Main Street corridor design where LTD was involved, you know, with the EMX bus expansion. Isn't that right? I mean, because I was in a meeting with you guys on that. And I understand that's been shelved for now.
The Main Street planning efforts are currently on pause, yes.
And if those are not adopted, then this TSP plan would be adopted, right?
So if a property owner wishes to develop along the Main Street corridor, the Springfield Development Code would apply, yes.
The TSP. Okay. So my question is, can you put this map up on the, can you put this figure 4.2-D up on the, there. This is the stuff that we got to look at. Now you see that right there, that's a major arterial with no on-street parking, which I would assume would be Main Street, right? I mean, there's no other streets around there that have a four-lane action like that, right?
It might be helpful to clarify that Main Street is a minor arterial and it is also under ODOT jurisdiction.
Well, but that's just changed, right? I mean, you guys have asked ODOT for like a safety report on the design of the Main Street. I know that's true. I know that's true, so you don't even have to answer it. And if ODOT adopts that, you've got an 84 feet design right there that shows that's the right of way. But if ODOT adopts that, you can't drive a car side by side going the opposite way on a four lane street. Does that happen anywhere here in Springfield? So then they'd have to put either a 14 foot turning lane.
Please, you can direct your.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, they have to put a four. Well, she'd have to put a 14 foot turning lane or a meridian, median in there. Permanent median, which would widen that out to almost 100 feet, which would mean then you'd be coming in and taking property from the adjacent property owners on Main Street. That doesn't show it. And that's deceptive, number one. But you know, and I've dealt with the city before, and I can tell you right now, it has never been a good experience on property. I mean, it's always been deceitful, always been half-truths, and it's pretty upsetting. But I'm just saying, you know, that if you're going to do something like that, you ought to make a drawing that shows a median or the turning lane in it. And if you put a median in it, then the businesses that are going down Main Street now, you're going to be able to access them from one side or the other. In order to go to a business on the other side, you have to drive down, turn through another stoplight, come back down the other way. So you're also affecting, you know, the traffic flow into the businesses that you're taking money from.
Okay. We got.
But you got that?
I hear what you're saying. I think Emma, correct me if I'm wrong. You entered some additional information into the public record.
But that's not in the. That wasn't in the original amendment. I know. I'm just saying that it's not the right way to do business. I mean, anybody in here, if you think these guys are gonna make it easy for you, I got news for you.
Okay. Thank you for your Okay, Jennifer Snyder and Marcel Carmen on deck.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Jennifer Snyder. I live at 25 Ann Court. You had the map up there recently. And I absolutely agree with my neighbor about getting rid of that walk path design. It would have unsafe consequences to the neighborhood, as well as, I think I heard the term, turning the roadway into some larger kind of traffic congestion, which would definitely happen since we're so close to the River Bend. I understand that may not be happening until River Bend decides to develop its parcel, but we don't know when that will happen. I actually came here with some prepared statements, and I I support and echo so many of my neighbors' concerns about our Hayden Bridge area being really overwhelmed with traffic. I myself am guilty of traveling seaward to Mansfield to get over to 19th instead of taking Hayden Bridge Road. But I would like to make two points that may be relevant, and I think are relevant to what we've heard tonight and the concerns we have as citizens here, whether we live in the urban growth boundary like myself or in the city of Springfield. At the moment, the city is engaged to construct a bike walk path adjacent through our neighborhood. But there's no clear way for the people who own the property that would be affected, maybe taken a little bit of that property, or for the neighbors, people who aren't property owners, the neighbors who live there, no clear way for us to understand what's really happening. There's no clear process for us to get clarification, and this is a great concern. When something as huge as a plan for the future, which is applaudable, happens, all of the people involved, whether we are property owners or renters, the people who live currently need to have access both to the information that will affect us personally, our children, our grandchildren, but also to have input when the actual actions are taking place. And that would be my second point. To be able to know exactly that we will be honored our, okay. And I would like you to codify that in the transportation plan to make it clear how citizens are can get information and can, and that we will be honored when the need, when the things happen. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. All right. Next, Marcel Carmen, and on deck, Jeff Nelson.
Hi, I'm Marcel Carmen. My address is 1072 Nancy Avenue. We're in Springfield. And I really hate speaking in public, so I wrote down some things here. I have lived in Beverly Park since 1959. I was raised in a house on Darlene. When my parents were no longer able to keep the home, my husband and I bought it. We live on Nancy, so we're actually have two properties a block away from each other. Sold the house to my daughter. So now we have fourth generation living in the same neighborhood. We're kind of committed there. I started at Guiley Elementary the first year the school opened. My kids went to Guiley. My grandkids are going to Guiley. So we've seen a lot of changes in the neighborhood, some good, some not good. But what concerns me at this point is the issue again of opening the diverter on Dawn Street and Lockhaven. The kids walk to school in the street because there are no sidewalks on Beverly, Darlene, or Nancy. We have so many trucks that drive through the neighborhood. They have destroyed our curb on the corner. We're on the corner of Nancy and Beverly. The city came out and repaired it once a few years ago. The trucks came through, destroyed it again. A couple years ago, we had the city out again to give us an estimate, and they said, you know, this just isn't on our list of priorities. So, you know, this neighborhood is, we thought it was going to be our first home, our starter home, but we settled in, we love it, we've stayed there almost 100 years ago. But it's not a wealthy neighborhood. This is, you know, they're beginner homes. And I can't imagine how, if that diverter was opened and we put in sidewalks, how any of us are going to be able to afford to pay for sidewalks. It just, we've got to be, you know, a corner lot, and I don't see it happening. So my question to you is, if the divert is removed, it's no longer safe to walk in the streets. That's just a given. Who pays for the sidewalks? That's a real concern for every person that lives there and for the renters, that their rents are going to go up to pay for this. You know, I think it's the most important thing to keep everybody safe. And, you know, by opening that diverter to relieve traffic on Harlow Road so somebody can save 2 minutes is just a real detriment to our quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you. This diverter staff, what is she referring to?
She's referring to this intersection here at Dawn and Lockhaven.
So it's a dead end.
The street currently is open from Lockhaven up north to Dawn and from Lockhaven south to where it says Shelley.
Shelley.
But there's no cross access between the southeast and the northwest currently.
Okay. I got you. It's okay. Okay. Jeff Nelson.
Thank you very much, commissions. My name is Jeff Nelson. I'm representing Springfield Utility Board, located at 258 Street. South has a number of properties in Springfield and in the county, so I probably got 10 or 15 postcards. I appreciate that. The things I'd like to talk about today is I appreciate the efforts that are done by the county and the city. Seth does try to collaborate with those agencies to try to be as effective as we can in developing our infrastructure. Sometimes these processes are complicated. Sometimes there's transition. We've heard of folks that have been with the city and moved on. But in some of those cases, sub shared information, and in this case, it may have been overlooked. And so I just wanted to highlight 65th Street. I did provide you a handout. But at the end of 65th Street, sub owns a property that's outside the floodplain. And sub has plans for a new surface water treatment facility, which is critical water infrastructure. And right now there's a proposed street and multi-use path at that location. I think that was just an oversight, given the prior communications that sub and the city had. And then the next item I'd like to talk about, so that particular place is within the city limits and within the urban growth boundary. The other location is Area B in my testimony, which is South 26th Street, which is outside the urban growth boundary, outside the city limits. So I guess this is directed to the planning, planning commission.
So is it inside the UGB and outside the city limits?
It is outside.
Or outside both?
Outside both on this map.
Okay.
And that has to do with a small connector multi-use path proposed. And that particular location, there is some disagreement about the right-of-way and property ownership. And so I was assured that the transportation plan for that particular area would be more expanded upon after the UGB was finalized, and so that would happen down the road. So I was thinking that perhaps this was a little bit of a premature, and that there would be a further opportunity to have discussions because subs received information regarding a connectivity to the Millrace Path, or sorry, the Middle Fork, which is different than what the city has represented on this design. So I think it would be helpful for both the city, Willamette Lane, and sub to have further discussions before any plan designation is in this process.
Got it.
And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and my final card is from Brett.
Right here. Gotta save the libertarian for last. Hey, how y'all doing? My name is Brett Forrest. I live at 1050 Darling Avenue. I am a prior service active duty of 3 combat tours, so I understand that when a lot of people move in, your planning is 5, 10, 15 years. Just look at Bagram Air Base and you go like, whoa. Anyway, My biggest question is, because we kind of live in an area that Springfield forgot
i.e. the, like I said, Darlene Street. My big question is, and I know this is more for the city council because they handle budgetary and financial issues, is the big 300-pound elephant in the room, eminent domain, okay? Partial taking. So our road is not that large, all right? So at my house, I'm gonna lose generally about 10 to 15 feet in my lawn. So I wanna know, and maybe again, I should address this to the city council, is one, am I gonna be required to pay for this? Two, will a property assessor come out to my home and either increase or decrease the value? Because that affects my taxes. And that's something that really hasn't been, you know, talked about, is the gentleman stated earlier, again, cause and effect. So our property values go down, I pay less money in taxes. We have less money to actually pay for what we currently have. So those are kind of the financial, you know, nuts and bolts of, you know, who's gonna pay for it? Am I going to be required to? If so, do I get a tax break? If not, well, why not? So that's really the questions that I have for this committee. Again, not decision makers, but those with a healthy amount of influence to the key decision makers, i.e. the Springfield City Council. So again, when it comes to Darlene and the opening of the diverter, which then we can talk about long-term, you know, traffic safety proposals, public safety proposals, and, you know, impacts to transitory routes and whatnot. But the biggest question is, if I lose that 15%, that 15 feet of my front yard, how does that impact me? And I'm just one guy living in that neighborhood. And no one has even remotely said, hey, these are the financial impacts to you, the taxpayer, the people that are ultimately going to foot the bill for all of this. And again, a lot of it is needed because, like I said, Eugene and Springfield are growing by leaps and bounds. And our infrastructure, again, foster an environment, maintain and improve infrastructure and facilities, one of the Springfield City Council's core values. That's about it. Muchas gracias, y'all.
Thank you. Okay, that is all of the public testimony that we have cards for. Is there anyone else that would like to address the Planning Commission this evening? Yes? If you could state your name.
Somehow I didn't get a card and I didn't know about it.
Okay.
But my name is Chet Robb. I live on 910 UNC Avenue. And in the area where Darlene Street is. And I did not honestly know about all of this because I've been sick. I just got through having pneumonia. And so, but I did call today and found out a little bit of information from the card. I talked with a very nice gentleman. And I did not know that there was going to be sidewalks and so forth. But, I know my neighbors, and I don't think there's a lot of money in this neighborhood, let's just put it that way. And if there's gonna be additional things I know I bought my house without a sidewalk, and that was, I didn't think anything about it. And I would appreciate not having to be able to pay for one. I do have a different view than probably my neighbors on that. At the end of Don Street, where they have that that gate, I talked to the man here that works here at Springfield, and he assured me that if they removed that gate, they would only remove it so far, only so that people that live in that area, which is a manufactured home court and private homes, would be able to have another way of being able to leave. For example, if there's an emergency, as far as I know, there's only one entrance into that area. And so it would be nice to have another area. And my property does butt onto Don Street. I'm on the corner of Don and Nancy, and I know that it would increase car traffic, but he assured me they would have a no truck allowed rule on Don Street that would go into there. And also through Guy Lee School and everything, that the only trucks that would be allowed would be like a moving van moving furniture in, or if someone had to have a roof put on their house, there would be a truck come in, put the roof on, but basically it would be local needs. And they would put a gate just beyond the trailer, that street that goes into the mobile home park, manufactured home park, and they would put a gate there, he said, that would not allow anything except for a fire truck to go through, and they would have the key to that gate. The gate would just be moved a few yards. And I don't know, maybe I don't have all the information, but it did seem to make sense to me. But if it's not good, then I'm against it, of course, as well. But what he explained to me, I see no problem with that, and it would help the people that live back there to have another access road. I keep reminding myself that we need to do unto others as we would have them do unto us. And so I thought if I lived there, I would appreciate that other avenue of escape if there was an emergency and to be able to get out. So I guess that's all I wanted to say.
Okay. So that concludes public testimony for this evening. We have questions from the commission. Commissioners, questions at this time? I know that thematically we had several things come up this evening. And I'd just like to highlight those quickly and certainly with input from the other commissioners. We heard resoundingly a question in relation to communication related to this action. And so I would like to take a moment and just have staff address the process that was followed for communication out to the public in relation to this public hearing, and as well as the open houses and the other types of processes that have built to where we're at this stage. So maybe you can address that.
Yeah, I'd be happy to speak to that. So there's several different pieces. There was a stakeholder sounding board that primarily had membership continuing on from the TSP development and adoption process back in 2014. So there was continuity from adopting the high-level policies into developing the draft proposed changes.
And what I heard stated more than once were that there were folks that were involved in the Main Street process. And was there inclusion from that Main Street group in this group?
There was not specifically a Main Street property owner, so that's something that you can think about. There was also the public notice sent out to all property owners in accordance with ballot measure 56, and that had to be sent out legally between 20 and 40 days in advance of your first hearing. Staff discussed it and went on the longest time frame so that people had opportunities to attend the open house, to drop in and ask questions on January 9th. All the material has been available on the project webpage. All of the appropriate legal notice in advance of this hearing has also been submitted. We notified the state in accordance with the notice in advance of this type of hearing. There's also been a lot of follow-up phone calls, emails, drop in to City Hall to talk to staff. So staff have done our best to respond to people. Our goal is to respond within 48 hours to all of the questions and comments that we've received. And I would say we've done
Emma, the mailing that went out, the postcard that went out, the data set that you pulled that those mailing addresses from, was that provided by
That's based on the Lane County tax assessor's records, yes.
Okay, so the tax assessor's records. So of all deliverable addresses within the UGB, is that correct?
Correct, within the Springfield Urban Growth Boundary, and I'll defer to Christina.
If I can clarify, so the statute lays out who they have to be sent to and what addresses you use. So they have to be sent to property owners as shown on the latest version of the tax assessment rolls.
Okay, so if you're a renter.
So if you're a tenant, then you may not get a notice if the address that's on file with the tax assessor does not match your residence.
It's going to go to the property
owner. It's going to go to the property owner, and that is the legal requirement under ballot measure 56 and the statute that codifies that.
So if I was a property owner in Springfield, I owned rental properties, and I lived in Timbuktu, I'm going to get a postcard.
Then if that address in Timbuktu is on the Lane County assessment roll as the property owner's address, then the city would have mailed a postcard to that address.
So I think that clarification is a good clarification for the audience. If you are a tenant and not a property owner, mm-hmm. potentially, you would not have been notified, correct?
I can verify that. I'm sorry, I'm not speaking. My name is Julie Goodyear. I live in Louisiana. And I got a postcard.
Okay.
But I didn't get anything else.
Okay. So, okay. Now, please proceed. I think you were, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I felt it was very important that we identify who exactly received the postcard information and how we gathered that information.
You also spoke about Main Street.
Yes.
So this morning we sent out an e-update, an email to all the interested parties that are on the Main Street mailing list to help clarify that the Main Street planning efforts are currently on pause, and there's this separate public notice that has gone out for this project because we've received some questions that indicated there might be some confusion. So that email went out this morning and it went to the full Main Street interested parties list.
Good. All right. So thematically, I heard communication. I heard some other themes. I heard a little bit of confusion around what those lines on the map mean. You know, that's a conceptual map of if development occurs, those would be by default the. You know, if I was a developer and I was going to develop property in those areas, those I could develop and I could go straight to that map and say, I'm going to develop this vacant property. And I could follow that by design and purchase the properties that I needed to do the development. And if I followed that map by design, it would streamline my process for development. Is that correct? But there are also other cases where the city might choose to move forward with development, and that would be by design how the development would occur. Is that correct? I'm looking to our legal counsel.
So the primary way that the black lines on this map would function is that these establish a network for local street connectivity. So under the proposed code language that you have at 4.2105, there are connectivity standards there, and is essentially to establish a two-tier system. One, as you explained, if you are developing property that needs to be served by a street connection that doesn't exist currently, then you can construct the black line, and that will meet the standard that the city has laid out. Alternately, if the developer has a reason that is impractical, or if there's no black line on the map and there's a connectivity need, then the written connectivity standards in the code would apply. This map does not govern the city's eminent domain authority, so it may be an expression of what the city would view as a priority for that eminent domain authority, but there's nothing that connects this map to any city plan or authority to go out and procure public right-of-way. In theory, the city could condemn public right-of-way for a road purpose through a separate process if this map doesn't exist or if this map does exist. So nothing on this map would control or regulate any eminent domain authority that the city would have. It's strictly a development regulation.
So that was another theme I heard. I heard also a theme related to, and I think there was some confusion there on the from public standpoint about what this map, what these lines on this map really reflect. I heard the concern from several small community groups that were on the urban fringe in relation to connectors that are on the map increasing traffic through their neighborhoods. And I heard that concern voice probably 8 or 10 times during the course of the meeting tonight. I also heard a comment in relation to better signage, a need for better signage. I heard its comment also on multiple occasions. I think there is a perception that this map and this plan are set the city on course for development and moving this process forward before taking care of our current street-related issues. And I think clarity needs to be brought to the difference between this planning process and a process to maintain our current streets. Okay?
I can speak to that very briefly. The city's planning, this is to primarily this project implements the city's obligations in the under the transportation planning rule, which requires that we set out plans for how transportation systems will look and how development will provide for sufficient transportation and transit in the city. The city has a capital improvement plan that is a separately adopted document that provides for the revenue that the city has to spend on street projects and prioritizes those. So the transportation system plan does not allocate money to any specific project. It identifies the relative cost of the project for the city to perform that project or construct that project. And then the capital improvement plan is the process by which the city
implements and pushes it.
Yes, implements. And then the city also adopts and collects systems development charges for transportation-related improvements. And that methodology is, and how the city collects those and what those charges are not proposed to be changed as part of this project.
Exactly. I think that's good clarity.
I have a question. Can the floor ask a question?
You can step up to the microphone and provide public testimony. I'm
not trying to have a rebuttal. I just want a clarity on that topic specific. Again, if you do look at the specific
Jim
McLaughlin, 2600 19th Street.
Okay.
It does say that you should identify the positive and negative impacts. And all I'm saying, you don't have to explain what you're doing, but I think you do have to make that step. It says this is the negative impacts of
this
plan.
Is the goal 12 issue.
The goal 12 2B, and here they are right here, and I'll leave
okay,
them.
Okay, enter it into the public record.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
But I'm just pointing it out. It's not just the explanation. It's do the work that the goal that the planning effort says. And there's many others that I don't think have been met, or at least I haven't seen. Excuse me. And, you know, you need to do it so we don't get this thing appealed at another level.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I just wanted that clarity. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you.
All right. So that's been entered into the public record as well. That was one of the themes that I heard. Another theme that I heard was the theme of safety. Okay. In relation to, I heard from a standpoint of safety of children, safety of increased traffic flow through areas that the streets were not sufficient to support that level of traffic flow. So those were all themes that I heard that came out of the public testimony tonight. There may be others. Commissioners, thematically, did you hear other themes, other things coming forward tonight? Or yes?
Yes, very good. On the county side, I heard concerns over the impact financially and implicitly on non-incorporated areas. through road and infrastructure changes, and concerns on who might pay for some of yes. those changes, yes. and uncertainty on the true meaning of the urban growth boundary and what it might mean to them.
Excellent. Okay. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I wanted to say that I really appreciated listening to the 2.5 hours of public testimony this evening. There might have been some of the testimony that I didn't appreciate quite as much. As a citizen volunteer, I have to tell you I don't appreciate being rudely criticized. But I was a basketball referee, so I have a pretty thick skin. I can take most of that stuff. I also want to say I really appreciate the work of staff. Believe it or not, this is an extremely complex and comprehensive project that we need to do. Staff has done a great job of getting us to where we are today. Are there improvements that we can and still should make to this process? I believe there are, and I can tell you that the people up here will be working with staff to try to listen to your comments and incorporate changes into this plan as we move forward.
Excellent. Okay.
I heard some concerns. I guess they relate to our last goal here regarding livability. Number of them related to the connectivity. I call it the connectivity issue, where you connect streets that have not been connected before, traffic, public safety for walking, etc. And also on that same connectivity issue, there have been a number of problems brought forth about bike paths. So I wanted to make sure that was addressed. A couple of people in Ann Court, and then the other one along Lock Haven. And then I believe there was one more near quite a few, actually.
Okay. Yes.
What's this schedule for the process now? Are we continuing the hearing? Are we going to have another joint session? When will we deliberate and make a recommendation?
The process, and council can talk about this, I mean, our legal counsel can talk about this, but the intent is, I believe, to continue the public hearing and until our meeting on February 6th. And at that time, we will open again for public testimony. Is that correct?
My understanding is that that's the agreement between city staff and county staff and council about how to meet the notice requirements required by Lane County for timeline. And so that will take, at least from the Springfield Planning Commission, that will take a motion to continue it to February 6th. And then earlier there was some discussion about it could be in an alternate location. You need to clarify the location that it will be held. So if it would not be held in this room or at City Hall, then you would need to provide the location at that time. And I believe the county would need to make the same motion.
So question for staff, is Council Chambers available on February 6th?
Yeah.
Okay. So Council Chambers are available on February 6th. And, you know, I appreciated the ability to get the people into the space. And I appreciated the ability to have the use of microphones so folks could hear what was going on. So I think that the Council Chamber is a good location, would be a good location. And I would offer that as a location for our February 6th continuation of the hearing. Would that meet sure. the requirements of the commissions? Yes, do I get a general head nod? I know that we need a motion. I would say that we would like to propose having a continuation of the hearing. We haven't voted on the continuation of the hearing yet, but we would propose having it in council chambers on February 6th. Do you need a formal motion?
If you could just move to continue the public hearing.
Okay, let's do that. We can roll that into the motion for continuation.
Well, perhaps we should address the fact that we also suggested a work session the same night. So I think instead of our work session being at 7 p.m., on February 6th, we should schedule our work session for earlier. So in
case... You don't need a motion on the work session part of it. You just need a motion to continue the public hearing.
Okay.
So we will have another work session before.
I think that is critical because, yes, Brenda's shaking her head.
I didn't know we were going to go into another work session. So.
Yeah, work session is not currently planned. We were just thinking that you might want to continue the public hearing in a regular session on the 6th. So if you would like a work session as well, that would be good to know.
What is our commissioners? What do you think?
Personally, I think a work session would be a good idea to address some of the public comment that's come already to provide better answers and information for the second public meeting.
Yeah, I think it'd be valuable too. Response from staff to a lot of questions.
Great. Yes.
One concern I have is that with all the public comment, we have work sessions where we become very informed on what's going on. With the level of interest here, I think it's important for everybody in the audience to be as informed as we are on the topics which they're offering testimony and we're receiving testimony on. So I don't know if it would work better if we just had a longer public hearing or start a public hearing earlier, but I feel that everything we can accomplish in a work session can be accomplished in a public hearing, and that way there's a larger audience for that session.
My concern as well is that we during a work session cannot deliberate, and I think part of what we need to do is deliberate. And I think, you know, I think this comes to your point as well. I think we can probably continue the public hearing and take additional testimony and have staff recap what we have heard and ask for additional information if we need it. We certainly can request additional information prior to the February 6th public hearing or continuation of the public hearing, and we can move into deliberation after we get through additional public testimony. Is that, am I stating that correct?
Yeah, the public hearing is simply the time during a regular session as opposed to work session in which testimony is accepted, but you can conduct deliberations or converse with staff before the public hearing is closed or in the regular session, both before or after you were to reopen the public hearing.
But not during the work session.
During a work session, you can have discussion and you can deliberate. You cannot vote.
Okay.
So a work session is open to the public. So the public meetings requirement is that if you are deliberating towards a decision, that must be done in a public meeting, and a work session qualifies as a public meeting. So this is a legislative land use decision. So you can have discussions and deliberations at a work session. You just can't take any final action or any vote at that point because this is legislative. In a quasi-judicial setting, then that would be different.
Okay. That's good clarification. So we could go either way. Chris, what I'm hearing. Yes.
My main concern was essentially we have a work session where we have, say, 20 people in the audience, and then by the time the public hearing actually starts, we have 80 more people filtering the room. And then we have to re-inform 80 people things that 20 people have already heard. And on top of that, some things might not be reset. Some of our deliberation may not be seen, and some of the questions may not be heard by those 80 people. I think it's beneficial to the constituency for us to have a longer public hearing and not have a work session in this specific instance, and maybe call a public hearing for 6 p.m. instead of a regular session.
Well, have we already noticed the...
My question is both commissions have to be unified in this decision?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. We'll reach consensus. That's what we're moving toward. You're right. We have to.
Because one commission can act without the presence of the other.
That's correct. Has there been public notice for the February 6th, 7 p.m. continuation of the public hearing?
No, there has not. What you decide this evening will be put into the record, and it's for everyone here to hear, and we will also update the project web page that I just pulled up that does not state a specific time. It just says February 6, 2018, Joint City and County Planning Commission continue public hearing and recommendation.
So we have the ability to say we want to begin at 6 o'clock as opposed to 7 o'clock.
I just want to clarify with the county planning staff that your newspaper notice, did you newspaper notice February 6th at 7 p.m.? Because I think that would...
That was what I was asking.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that. I know that the other...
I know the newspaper notice that we joint sent out did say tentative for the February 6th date, knowing that we would announce at this evening's meeting what the actual decision would be. So...
So unless that 7 p.m. time was included in that newspaper notice, I think you could set the time this evening by pushing.
So my question then to the commissions collectively is, do we have a desire, because of the public interest, to start our meeting on February 6th at an earlier time to allow enough time to move through the process and deliberate?
Well, I've got a procedural consideration.
Okay.
The legal notice did indicate 7 o'clock p.m. on February 6th.
So then I would recommend not beginning your public hearing portion of the meeting earlier.
So then the question would be back to whether we would want a work session. There was a concern voiced about having a work session like we had tonight, where we had a small turnout for the work session and a large group attend the 7 o'clock. So probably, if we've already noticed, my sense would be we move forward with 7 o'clock and we do what we can, and if we need to continue and keep the public hearing, continue the public hearing, we could beyond that, correct?
I suspect that.
Correct, and you can, you need to have one record and one public hearing as a joint body, but you could also, if time doesn't allow, you could decide to conduct your deliberations on your recommendations separately.
Yes.
So that's another option.
Okay, Randy. Okay, Randy.
Yeah, I'm all in favor of not having a work session, having the public hearing on the 6th at 7 p.m., go through the public hearing, begin deliberations. If we can't come to a conclusion that evening, then we can decide whether to do it jointly or go our separate ways.
Yes, I agree with that.
I would make that motion.
Second.
And that's on behalf
of
your this is Lane County's motion.
All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Carries unanimously.
Good. All right. So the Springfield Commission would need a motion.
I move to continue the public hearing and reconvene at this location at 7 p.m. February 6th.
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded by the Springfield Planning Commission to continue the public hearing and reconvene at this location on February 6th at 7 o'clock p.m. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. We have consensus, and at this time, we will not close out the public hearing, but we'll move into our own Springfield Planning Commission continuation of our meeting. At this time, you certainly are welcome to adjourn the County Planning Commission, and you're welcome to stay, or you're welcome to take off your points.
I don't need a motion on that. Let's adjourn our meeting. Lane County Planning Commission is adjourned.
Okay. Thank you, commissioners, for joining us.
Thank you.
And we will see you at 6 or 7 p.m. at this location.
Hey, are you going to go?
All right.
Okay.
Springfield Planning Commission is still in session.
Springfield Planning Commission is still in session.
In other words, would I turn in a written document? If I can do that,
We're the most into
this. Yeah.
So I would just write it.
All right, Springfield Planning Commission, we've got a couple of other items. We're still in session.
I think he's on
a report of city council action.
David is on an option.
Yes?
You're very welcome. Have a good night.
I attended a council work session on the 22nd. Discussed action plans from our HED funds. Mr. Vose was also there for that.
Very much for that.
So discussed an open street proposal similar to Sunday Street TV and things they do in Portland. Council wanted more budgetary information on that before saying they were in favor of it. Checking with partners. And then there was quite a long discussion on checking in on the budget.
Of this stuff, because I'm still
very interesting.
Where I fall.
How would I do that?
It was informational.
Okay. Any reports? All right. Any business, other business from the Planning Commission? Hearing none, business from Public Works Director or Greg?
You guys are busy.
Okay. All right. We stand adjourned.
Room 7 is not really.
Okay.
Brenda, are you trying to move these brown chairs out of the room?
Okay.
So
the brown chairs just go down there.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll put it back together. If you have time, great. If not, I can.
Yeah, I'd love to help.
Okay.